Schönen guten Morgen.
Schönen guten Morgen.
Mittag.
Schönen guten Mittag.
Schönen guten Abend.
Schönen guten Nacht.
Und herzlich willkommen beim Schauplatz Podcast.
Ja, herzlich willkommen bei einer ganz spontanen Folge um 3.14 Uhr nachts. Und wir haben hier einen ganz speziellen Gast, einen Freund des Hauses, den Brandon. Den kennt ihr vielleicht aus Filmen wie Ein Fest fürs Leben mit Christoph Maria Herbst. Denn da ist der Elvis von ihm verkörpert worden. Einer der Elvisse.
Hallo.
Mm-hmm. You were the second one.
Yeah. Were you consider yourself as the first or the second Elvis on that?
I was the first because I taught everyone else. So like I was the only one that was actually an officially an Elvis tribute artist.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah.
How did that happen? Since when have you been a tribute artist?
They actually had an open audition, and then mm-hmm. my wife sent something in and said, "Hey, by the way, he actually does perform." And they said, "We were looking for him. Could he help us like train everyone else how to look like Elvis for this scene?" And I was like, "Sure, yeah, absolutely." After 30 years, it just kind of comes natural. So, yeah, it was cool. I have so many stories from set, but I'll leave you guys.
I think most of the listeners are curious about working together with Christoph Maria Herbst.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Tell the whole story.
So, how I met Christoph initially was we were told do not interact with the main actors. Now, I myself was, in fact, considered a main actor, but they didn't want us to interact with, like, the stars, because they didn't want to get them off their game. So I was actually just literally, like, stretching in the hallway, because I knew that my scene was going to involve dancing, and it would be pretty embarrassing to pull a hamstring or something. So I was stretching, and then Christoph walks by, and he complimented my outfit in English. I must have this thing about me where I just look American, because people
very
just,
much so, yeah.
Yes, people just speak to me in English
in a way.
Yeah, so, but he knew that I spoke English. Very 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 sweet guy. But what was funny was they said do not interact with him, but he interacted with me. So
you had no choice.
Yeah. I mean, I'm like, well, I guess
you should have said you were meant to not interrupt with me.
Right, you're right. It was very cool. He's a very, very sweet guy. All the way up to the movie premiere, like when we had the movie premiere, they pulled him off to the side, but he didn't necessarily want to be off to the side. Mm-hmm. And that's what I like about him, because he's much more personable than you would assume he would be.
Yeah, much more approachable.
Yeah. Yeah. He's an everyday guy, and mm-hmm. I love that about him. Like, if he does happen to hear this podcast, Christoph, I love you. I asked him to take a picture for my friend today picture. Like, I do this thing, Facebook friend today challenge, Instagram, Facebook. I take a picture with people. Mm-hmm. I tell their stories. And I said, Christoph, would you like to act like you're fighting? And he went all in.
Nice.
He didn't have to. But he took a great photo of him acting like he was like fighting me with mm-hmm. karate. And it is a great picture. And that, I think that says a lot about him, because he could have been like, no. But instead, he's like, "Yeah, sure, why not?" That's what I like about him. So to work with him was, I mean, I'm from America, so we're not familiar with him. I think he played a Bond villain or something. He played like a bad guy in some movie.
Mm-hmm. He played in Stromberg, which is like the equivalent to The Office.
The Office, yeah.
The equivalent. Well, they stole it from The Office.
Yeah, right.
That suit, and then they had to.
Yeah, that only time I'd seen him was that. And then when I very first moved to Berlin, they had Stromberg on English subtitles.
Oh.
And it was the only show that had English subtitles. Mm-hmm. So I watched it.
Did you learn German with it? Did it help you?
Lass das mal Papa machen. Yeah.
I learned German with SpongeBob.
Oh, yeah. Really?
Yeah. I came to Germany when I was 7 years old, about 2001. And I learned German with SpongeBob.
I mean, yeah. I can tell you the only German that I know is because of Elvis. The song Wooden Heart.
My boss learned German with South Park.
Really?
Yeah.
That's fascinating. Mine was just
And is it still recognizable?
No comment.
Oh.
Mine was like I was listening to Wooden Heart,
Makler.
blah blah blah, and all of a sudden, Musi Den, Zum Stay to Lady Nals. So I learned that, and then I thought it was like some super sweet lyric. So I sang that to the girl I had just proposed to, and then
Oh no,
she looks at me, she's
Musi
like, "That is the stupidest song." I was like, "But I learned it for you." She's like, "Yeah, but that song is so
Yeah, but Musi
stupid."
Den, this sounds like the name of like an antique Greek prophetess.
I looked the lyrics up. I'm like, oh, okay, I see. But in my little American heart, it was like super sweet.
This is so stupidly ironic, yeah.
That's how we learn, I guess. But the effort was there. So, ladies, A for effort.
Actually, we got the idea to put the recordings on when Brandon wanted to tell us a story where he got hidden in the face by someone. So please tell the story as suspenseful as possible.
Absolutely. So I have many stories in my history, but the one that really sticks out because it's visible every single day is one that no one ever believes. I was told to go to Chicago and then to do this photo op with Mike Tyson. The rest, the boxer. Well, I mean, he's WWE Hall of Famer as well, but the boxer. Now, as a kid
The
growing up in the
cannibal.
80s, yeah, right, yeah. In the 80s, he was the most fierce person in the world. Like, everyone was scared of him. And so, like, they said, "Hey, would you like to meet him?" Yes. Who wouldn't want to meet a legend? And so they said, "We're going to take this photo of you. We want you to pop around the corner and like just do this sweet picture, and then he's gonna like act like he's hitting you." The problem with that is Mike is a seasoned boxer and he doesn't really know what a phantom punch is.
Oh no.
Yeah,
Wasn't he wrestling?
well, sort of like it
Okay.
was a WWE. Yeah, he did the whole thing. So the timing was a perfect storm. I had literally just had a root canal done like the day before, 2 days before. So they said, "Do not, don't shake it, don't hit it." And I had this genius idea. Yeah, "Hey, Mike, yeah, let's take this great picture. I'm gonna be Elvis, and you act like you're hitting me." So my root is, newly fixed, and then he pops around the corner, and the photographer's there, and he's like, "All right, we're gonna take this picture. One, two, three, and then Mike's gonna pop around and act like he's hitting you." "Oh, cool, yeah, that should be great." And so he's like, "Elvis, stand right here." "Okay, done. All right, ready? One, two, three." And all I hear is, "Elvis!" And next thing I know is like his big, gigantic knuckle had
Oh
grazed my. I have high cheekbones for the
no.
listeners who have never seen me. I have high cheekbones. So he grazed that and then touched just a little bit of his knuckle on my cheekbone, shattering everything the dentist had just done.
Oh
And so it, but the thing about dental work is it's not immediate.
no.
So you bruise, you feel it. It wasn't until the next day I was driving around, and at that point in time I was a truck driver as well. So I remember going to my first stop and thinking, "Man, there's something in my mouth." And it was my tooth. So all the dentist work that had just been done, I was spitting out into the palm of my hand. And I got a hold of
Oh God,
my,
no.
yeah, got a hold of my girlfriend at the time. I was like, "Hey, I'm spitting out my tooth." And she's like, "Well, because of Mike Tyson." And I thought, "Wait, oh my God, Mike Tyson knocked out my tooth." And I've struggled with it because
Conflicting feelings.
it's such a cool story. I haven't gotten my tooth fixed. So, like when I'm doing my performances as Elvis, it's very visible because I have a very wide smile, and so it's a very visibly like it's missing. But to me, if it's a story, why fix it? So, like to get an implant would be like covering up that fantastic story. I probably should. I've had like my acting agent tell me that I should. But at the same point in time, I'm like, "Yeah, but you know what happened to this tooth? this tooth, it wasn't meth. It wasn't drugs.
It wasn't Mike Tyson.
Yeah, it wasn't a bar fight.
Maybe some slices.
It was Mike Tyson. Yeah. So it's hard to be upset. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, where I'm from, drugs are a big thing, especially like heroin and blah, blah, blah. So most of the people back home, they don't have teeth because they do drugs. This is Mike Tyson knocked out my dental work. I'll own that forever. I mean, that's
amazing. Yeah, I would so too.
Yeah. And when someone's like, oh, wow, you're missing a tooth. You know why? Mike Tyson. And they never believe me, so I pull out the pictures.
And your ear is still
whole. Yeah, my ears are still there. Yeah. And that's what's weird, because my ears kind of stick out. I feel like that's just saying, bite me, Mike. But for some reason, it was just a tooth.
Hey, Mike, I got something for you.
Yeah, yeah. Mike Tyson just wanted my dental. So, yeah.
But, he was looking for gold. He was looking for metals.
Yeah. And one of the biggest questions I get asked is, why didn't you sue him? Why would I sue him? Like, it was my idea. Like, when you say, hey, let's do this, and then he agrees, you should feel fortunate that he was kind enough to do something like that. So, am I missing a tooth? Yes. But what cooler way to lose a tooth than Mike Tyson?
Yeah.
Come on. Yeah. And that picture can be found on That Elvis Guy on Instagram and on Facebook. Literally all of my social media is That Elvis Guy, one word.
Yeah. So just so you don't wonder, That Elvis Guy. My name is Neighbor Sculptor. I'm going to follow you.
Okay. Oh, awesome. Yeah. Every story that I have is so unbelievable that people have to actually look at the pictures because they don't believe it. Jason Momoa, I had no idea who he was. We take this great picture. And later on, I'm like, oh, that big creepy biker guy was famous.
Mm-hmm.
The story,
I thought I was supposed to be famous.
Yeah. The story was is so incredible. The story.
So he randomly wanted to take a picture with you because you're Elvis.
Yeah.
That's the same thing with our friend Craig, who tells us stories about Paul Thomas Anderson. Being totally nervous to get in touch with him.
Oh,
yeah.
And that's then he gets cute. In touch
with Craig. Even himself doesn't know what to say.
Yeah.
Because there's only two. We have two guys who are fans of each other, like a Mexican
standoff.
Yeah.
Situation.
Me, that's a perfect example. Me and Greg. I'm a fan of Greg. He's a fan of me because I'm from Fairmount, like Fairmount, Indiana, home of James Dean. He heard the stories about how my very first fan was James Dean's father.
The last time you were visiting us, you brought a photo book with you.
Yeah.
With fucking private photos of James Dean.
Yep.
So.
Yep. And that's what's so weird. I didn't appreciate that until I came here.
Mm.
Because back home it's like, oh yeah, Jimmy. Like just a random.
Yeah. I had some kind of tourist gaze on that.
Yeah. To us, he's Jimmy. And, you know, I can go to the Winslow farm where he was raised.
Mm-hmm.
They know me by name. And I told a story to Nico earlier. Before I left America to come here, I walked up to the Winslow's door. And Marcus, who was literally one of the only surviving relatives of Jimmy, James Dean, opens the door, sees me as Elvis, and says, oh, hey, Brandon. Like, to think about that is crazy.
Mm-hmm.
So I love the fact that my hometown is so small and it is so loving. But yeah, it's crazy. The very first gig I ever did was Colonial Oaks Nursing Home. And James Dean's father was there. He was suffering from dementia and he was suffering from Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And I didn't know him from anyone. But the nurse came over and said, oh yeah, Winton Dean, he is a huge fan of yours. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And so my only conversation with Winton was I walked over to him, you know, and did the whole meet and greet thing. And he said, your music takes me back to a better time.
Oh, that's sweet.
It was beautiful.
Yeah.
And that stuck with me for, God, 20-something years. But it's unbelievable to me to see the impact that James Dean has had. Without James Dean, there would be no The Room. You know, plus countless other shows. So, yeah, that's why me and Greg really hit it off, because he's like, wow, you're from Fairmount. Tell me stories. That's like, you're an actor. Tell me stories.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one.
You're here to tell your story.
Yeah, here we are. Here we are for sure.
Yeah, if you're not going to write that novel, then at least you're telling us our story, yeah. Your stories.
I live by the thing, if I get hit by a tram tomorrow, all my stories go.
Mm.
So I will be more than happy to share anything, just for the fact that, you know, it's on record. So life's pretty short.
Life finds a way.
Yeah.
But your face is too pretty.
My face is too pretty.
To do a podcast.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. Yeah, they always said I had a face for radio.
Face that only a mom can love.
Right. That's why I was amazed that Greg is a pretty man. So
yeah, sure, he was a model.
Yeah,
I he barely changed. I just recently found out that he's in his late 40s and he still looks pretty similar to how he looked in his mid 20s in The Room. So
yeah,
what can you say?
Benjamin Button.
Benjamin Button, right? He's a pretty man. And Greg's gonna listen. So hey, Greg, love you.
hey, Greg. In case you really love us and not just pretend to be our friend, to hang out with some nice people, to
this is what this is what friendship is, Nico.
Or something. Okay.
This then is literally friendship.
Now contact us now. Just write cheap.
Yeah, just the chicken.
In our DMs.
I will give him credit. I said this earlier to you guys off the record, but I went back home to do an Elvis show for my 30th anniversary, and it's really, really, really easy to go back home and then feel so at home you don't want to come back. I worked 40 years of my life to get out of where I was, and then I came to Berlin. I fell in love with Berlin, Europe in general. And so when I went back home to visit, I got a little bit too comfortable and I reached out to Greg. I said, Greg, please talk me into coming back to Berlin. And he didn't even ask a question. Anyone else would have said, wait, what? He's like, bro. And he wrote me this huge thing. And the thing that stuck with me the most was, if you don't come back to Berlin, you will never travel again. That hit me so hard because he knows that my entire life I've wanted to travel. And then I did. I moved here. So in my mind, I'm like, I'm comfortable. Maybe I'll just stay here. But he's right.
Yeah, and from what you've taught, it sounds just like the your rhythm of life and your priorities are pretty close fit with Berlin. So that, like you said, like you were made for the city and the city was made for you.
Yeah, I thrive on chaos. I love chaos. I love waking up every day thinking, what is going to happen today? And in Berlin, you never know. It's just beautiful. I mean, even when I randomly decided to hitchhike to Poland, what's going to happen today?
And you survived that.
I did. It was beautiful. It was one of the most beautiful experiences in my life. Putting my entire health and safety in the hands of a stranger, and every person came up completely blew me away. It's so much love. Even from people, like there was one guy that was literally like fleeing Ukraine.
Mm-hmm.
And he took everything that he had been given fleeing Ukraine and gave to me.
What?
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. I'm like,
God.
And I kept telling him, like, you have been through so much worse than I have. And he's like, oh, but you're a human and I love you and you need this.
Oh.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
Just really conditionless, unconditional solidarity.
Yeah, it was beautiful, yeah. And that's the thing. I've always absolutely adored Anne Frank because she has had the idea that people are generally good. I may be naive. I had the same idea. I believe that people are generally good, but they're taught to be bad. And that's where one thing I said that earlier, and Greg kind of looked at me like, eh. But like, when it comes down to it, if you see an old lady fall down, mm-hmm. I really firmly believe that most people would want to help her.
Yeah. I mean, it's been proven that empathy is one of the earliest impulses in babies. This is transcultural. We are wired to care for other people.
Absolutely. That's. I think that we are. I think we're generally good, and that's a very unpopular opinion, especially back home. But I think people are generally good. People want to see happiness. I can't think of one time I've been on the tram and seen someone like laughing that wasn't on crack, that was like laughing and having a great time, and I didn't like kind of smile. Like, people want to see people happy.
Yeah, or just cyclists loudly singing a song while riding through great weather. Like, I just recently discovered some phenomena on me that I just call it massive co-happiness, because whenever someone really close to me, I just kind of got completely over envy. Whenever someone's close to me and to me has something good happened to them in their life and they're like acutely massively happy, then I have the impression of sitting under a radiator on a cold day, because it's just seeing other people happy, seeing people close to me happy, proves to me that the world is capable of giving people that.
I think Berlin, I'm gonna go completely off the record here, but like, I think Berlin is the perfect example of that, because there's so many different things in the city that point to a really dark, tragic history.
Mm-hmm.
But there's so much love and diversity here. It's beautiful. Like, to think where we were in 1940s versus now, it's insane. There's so much inclusivity.
Yeah.
And so much love. It's so beautiful to see where the city is now versus where it used to be. That's from an outsider. Maybe, I don't know, Nico.
You're not wrong. As far as I know that or knew that, Berlin is kind of a lightning spot or a northern star point of orientation for people coming from other smaller German communities and especially both queer and or artistic people trying to carve out an identity for themselves outside of bigotry and prejudices. And this is kind of the I don't know if Berlin fulfills that because I don't live here, but it's got this kind of image of being like this paradise for non-conforming people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Genau das wollte ich auch gerade sagen.
Was ist das?
you want to say just the same.
Oh, yeah, beautiful, beautiful. But again, I've only been here for 3 years. I should have learned some German by now. My integration course starts shortly.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Is this your first one, or...?
It'll be my first one, yeah.
Oh, okay.
But the thing is, I didn't want to love being here. Like, I'm like, oh, I'm from America, blah, 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 I miss my guns. And then I come here, and like I said, it's so welcoming, so loving, so inclusive.
We can try to do a test if we can let you come into our universe with some German film questions.
Okay.
Maybe.
Sure. Oh. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, I'm all for it. I mean, the only German film I'm familiar with is Ein Fest fürs Leben, because I was in it. I mean, hit me.
Just tell us three German directors.
Okay. I'm going to get his name completely wrong, but what is his name? I literally did a TV show for him, and I don't remember his name. I was in Helgoland 513, and his first name's Richard.
David Precht.
Richard David Precht.
I don't know. Okay. I'm going to agree because it sounds really good. Yeah. No, Helgoland, and then I should know my directors, but I, for some reason, don't. Richard Huber, because I'm Fest fürs Leben, director. Thank you, Richard, for the amazing opportunity, by the way. I can't think of a third, honestly. I like how you're like, I don't know. you tapped. Yeah,
I've already forgot the little question.
Three German directors.
Oh, okay, yeah, sure, I know.
Schwinski, Richard Schwinski. That was a name from Helgoland 513. So I was directed under Richard Schwinski.
Okay, Schwinske.
I guarantee I said that wrong. Schwinske, yeah. Richard Huber.
Robert Schwinske, vielleicht?
That sounds right. See, you're going to say it so much cooler than I do.
Robert Schwenke.
See, that's
almost, yeah. Right? It goes in the right direction.
Yeah, yeah. I think if he could hear this and fire me, he'd probably fire me. Like, you know what? I'm going to take you out of my project.
Take you off the back.
Yeah, yeah. You're out of the project. Yeah, you're off.
Okay, so far you're not part
Yeah.
of the
Yeah. But
German movement, the German white
does Greg
Schauplatz movement.
count?
Greg?
Yeah.
Greg is French, man.
Yeah. I mean, he directed Cyst, right? Eva
No,
Halberman.
he did not direct Cyst.
Yeah,
Yeah, he
producer. Oh,
co-produced
co-produced.
mainly with
Okay.
Eva and Alex.
Okay.
Oh, he did direct some films, right?
Oh
Miracle
yeah, the
Valley.
Miracle Valley, yeah.
And Forbidden Sky.
Forbidden Sky. I'm really looking forward to that. That's just gonna be fun.
I just
Oh.
remember his first mentionings of it. So, hey Craig, what are you doing? I'm looking for a location for an alien movie. I make
Normal
UFO.
thing to
No, no,
say,
no. He said
right?
he wrote something like, "I make UFO movie."
So
Even more normal thing to say.
Greg Sestero, I'm in Berlin. I used to live in Fairmount, Indiana. Technically Jonesboro, but Fairmount. And so I get this phone call one day, or not phone call, but I'm sorry, message. And he's like, "Hey, bro, guess where I am?" I don't know. He could be anywhere. Like the dude travels the world. I was like, I don't know. And then he sends me a picture of my barn. So I'm like, "You're at my house." He's like, yeah, I want to check this out. So he sends me a picture of my barn and then of my little grain silos. And then he's like, "Dude, this would be a great filming location." So the idea of me filming a movie like in my actual house, I absolutely love that idea. I think that'll be fun. My house is in the middle of the country, so it is a perfect place for an alien movie. You look up, all you see is Forbidden Sky.
Oh, great.
right.
No, yeah, it sounds totally like kind of an 80s VHS.
Yeah. And for everything he's wanting to do, I think it would be a perfect match for my house. So he's talking about going to New Mexico and shooting, Area 51 and shooting, which I think would be very cool. Yeah, he's got these great ideas. I can't wait to see it come to fruition, and see what he's got up his sleeve because he's.
He needs that because he's touring like it's the second 20th anniversary of The Room now,
Yeah.
but Craig still calls it the 20th anniversary.
Yeah, right.
Okay, maybe next year he can go further with that, but
Yeah.
then he needs a new double feature. Then he can
Yeah.
go 2 years with a double feature, and
Sure.
then it's like the 25th one and the second 25th and the third 25th and then the next double feature.
Yeah.
That's the way how it
I
goes.
was very fortunate because I got to meet not only Greg but also Tommy. So when I went to the very first viewing of The Room, it was Tommy. I hadn't met Greg yet. I just met Tommy, and so I kind of got this cool thing where I got to meet Tommy first and then Greg. And Tommy is also a fan of Fairmount, James Dean, also a fan of Elvis. And so my Tommy Wiseau story is, I walked in and he saw me beforehand. It's like, Elvis from Fairmount. I know you, yeah. So I go in there, I get my picture, blah blah blah. I go and sit down. I'm thinking, I'm just gonna watch The Room. And so in comes Tommy before the show starts. Hi, anyone know where Elvis was? Where's Elvis? I saw Elvis. And so I'm like, oh my God. And I wasn't even dressed like Elvis. That's the best part. And so he has me walk to the front of the crowd who was not there to see Elvis. They're there to see The Room. He's like, "Elvis, I want to hear you sing. Everyone wants to hear you sing. Ha 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 ha." And so I'm like, I guess we're doing this, okay? So I did like this silly little, 2 or 3 bar song, and everyone was super pumped because Tommy had introduced Elvis. But the thing about this was like during COVID, so everyone is wearing masks, they're wearing
Yeah.
gloves, and then out comes Tommy Wiseau, shaking everyone's hand, giving him high fives with no gloves. No, he did not care. And that's why I think I'm like, this guy's he's different. He's different. And then I got to meet Greg, and he confirmed Tommy is different.
Definitely.
Not good, not bad, just different. You are like a little monkey. Look at you over here climbing this thing.
Yeah, the spider monkey.
Spider monkey, yeah. Yeah, it's very cool to be able to come out here and be able to see Greg and kind of go through ideas for Forbidden Sky. I apologize, by the way. I've been singing all day. So, like, if my voice goes out, I apologize. It's kind of raspy already. But I did the...
I think I appreciate that. We love raspy voices.
Okay, perfect.
And, yeah, he is sitting in front of us and he's complete Elvis.
Yeah, yeah. I walked through Berlin as Elvis at 2 o'clock in the morning. I probably should have gotten really killed. Like, I wasn't walking through the best parts of Berlin. But 2 o'clock in the morning as Elvis. But the thing is, everyone, I think, thinks I'm crazy. So if they think you're crazy, they won't attack.
He looks like the young Elvis, and the other two in this room treat their bodies like the old Elvis.
Thank you very much. Yeah, it was a weird day. Like, I don't know if I'm allowed to plug, but I was at the Berlin Chili Fest. I did a little show. And so it ended up being more of a deal than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was going to be maybe sing a song or two, get people happy. But my first song, there were two people watching. And by the end of the second song, there were over 100. So that makes me feel like I've done my job because I've properly entertained.
And you, previously you've told me that you had a lot of technical difficulties.
Yeah.
So the people basically saw you you as an artist struggling to get a good show onto the stage, and it probably was a mixture of those two, of those being a genuinely good show and of people seeing you having an active struggle.
Yeah, I had some. I'm very transparent, especially during my shows. So before I went on stage, I said, "Look, I want to perform for you, but the only thing that we have that is an option is if I attach my phone Bluetooth to the speaker. But the problem with that is if I do that, you can only hear the background music, not the singing. So I had to pick singing or background music.
Oh.
So what I did was I took the second microphone and put the speaker of my phone up to the microphone, and then I played the music, and then the first microphone
must have sounded terrible.
Yeah, it was very treble-y. There was no bass at all. But the thing was, I think people saw that. So the people who were there from the beginning, they saw that and they said, wow, okay, he's really trying. And I did make a statement. Berlin Chili Fest, I can't perform for you, but I want to do my best to do that because I'm dressed like Elvis. You're expecting a show. And I want to be the one who makes you think, wow, that was a cool experience. So did I pull that, you know, out of my... my Southern American genes, yes. I completely rigged it so that I could do it. But judging by the fact that the crowd was much bigger at the end than it was at the beginning, that tells me I did something right. So, yeah.
Yeah, it reminds me of what we were talking about earlier about human empathy. Just you told me that you generally believe that humans are actually good in the core, and... just your experience with the festival, with people watching you struggle and still put on a show, it just reminds me that empathy is such a very fundamental gem, just part of who we are. And I mean fundamental, just that this is one of the earliest things that babies learn, or not even learn that they have. If they see a person in pain or struggling, they care.
Yeah. There. I mean, to me, there are two lessons. There's that one, that excellent summation, excellent. And the other one is, when I was trying to speak to a lot of the German folks, they didn't understand what I was saying until I started singing. Music is universal. It is a beautiful thing. I've learned since I've been out here that there are a lot of people that sing music in English lyrics, but they don't speak English. So they have so much passion for the song. They sing in English. And I'm the same way with Rammstein. I can like do a Rammstein song, but I have no idea what they're saying. But I feel the music. Like I feel, you just feel like, du hast. You know, I mean, you feel the music. So I think just music is universal.
Yeah, especially when you look at something like the metal genre, the metal scene going way international, like they are being very... great metal and hard music scenes and hardcore scenes at Botswana and in the Philippines. Even while music may be like culturally formed, it still has the capacity to cross barriers.
Yeah, No, and that's the thing, it can make you feel. You don't have to know what they're saying. You can just, it makes you feel. It's a beautiful
It's more
thing.
immediate.
Yeah, it's a beautiful thing. At first time I heard Sight by Rammstein. I don't know what they're saying, but the music is so moving, you feel it. So it's yeah, music is it's such a beautiful like it's just a it's universal. It's a beautiful.
I'm already figuring out how the AI can replace the Rammstein. Your quote through another band, if the AI sound of your voice.
I mean, in order to that there not be problematic artists behind Rammstein. So if Rammstein was made by an AI, it would be ethical to consume.
It'd be pretty difficult. I mean, AI is pretty amazing, but it'd be interesting to hear like AI's version of Till. Yeah, I mean that's pretty. I can do it right now because my voice is very like raw.
Please try. Du
Yeah,
hast mich.
du hast mich. But I can only do that because my voice is so raw. So I have that going for me now. But yeah, tomorrow
So,
morning,
sounds a
different.
little bit saarländisch. Du
Yeah,
hast mich.
du hast
Du
mich.
hast mich gefragt.
Und ich hab
Oder
nichts gesagt.
ich hab nicht gesagt.
Seid.
Du hast mich gefragt und ich hab nicht gesagt.
Yeah, that's the funny thing. Like when I go back, my wife will be like, "Talk to me," because my voice is so deep and so
Talk to me,
raw.
your Darth Vader
Just
voice.
say whatever you want to say, and I might,
May the
yeah,
force be with
it
you.
might save my marriage. Who knows? I mean, yeah.
It's like my podcast voice.
Yeah. Good evening, my darling. How are you?
Schönen guten Abend.
Just talk.
Schönen guten Mittag. Scheiße, wir nehmen alle hier mit einem Mikro auf. We're recording with just one microphone. That means I cannot put a compressor on my voice after it. So, fuck. It's not gonna be my podcast voice then, and everything's fade
Oh,
out.
then we have to get to know the real you. All of the listeners have to get to know the real you.
I know.
Or you compress all of our voices so that we all sound like Darth Vader.
Yeah, like chipmunks. I have the alien, the chipmunk, the robotic.
Oh.
I can put auto-tune on everything.
Oh my. What kind of drugs did you take? Cheep, 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 cheep.
You're just a chicken.
It's just a chicken. God, that movie's so perfect. It's so bad, but it's so perfect.
It's just a whole other world. Like, I think Mark, played by Greg, is the only one of the characters that does remotely behave like a human. Remotely. Like, we can say that of the Tommy figure, we can
Yeah,
say that of
but
his
you
ex-girlfriend.
don't know how you would behave if you would have breast cancer. I would be totally under shock.
I think one of my favorite moments, Nico, with Greg was going to the zoo. And I said, "All right, Greg, if."
Okay, that's right. Going to the zoo with Craig means half of the time we're watching animals with Craig, and the other half of the time Craig looks for the right position to make a selfie with the lion behind him.
I
Oh,
asked,
he's so basic.
yeah, I asked Greg, what, okay, if all the characters from the room were animals, what would they be? And he
And?
sat there for the second and he's like, oh, this is fantastic. He said he would be a cheetah because he's sleek and he's fast and he's out of the way. He said Lisa would be a rhino, which I thought
Why?
was genius.
Why?
Because she's big and she's loud and she's not afraid to charge you.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And then my favorite one, I think I was sipping coffee at the time, and I literally spit my coffee because it was so funny. He said, "Honestly, I think Tommy would be a lion." I said, "Really? Why?" And at that time, the lion had walked over to the water, and like, he goes, "Yeah, you must be kidding. I can't drink this." And I spit my coffee. I felt so silly, but I'm like, God, that was Fantastic. And of course,
Greg, like you don't even need to make poetry out of this because this thing is already poetry.
Yeah, yeah. It's Greg has this great dry delivery.
He drops these dry things, but yeah, you don't hear anything of him in 3 hours. Then he drops these slightly.
He is always, he's just like James Dean.
Hopefully not.
What I was taught about James Dean is James Dean is constantly picking your brain. So I've noticed that with Greg. Greg picks your brain. Like, he'll try to figure out who you are by asking things that you don't think are, like, any importance. Mm-hmm. And then he'll completely figure out who you are by picking those questions.
Yeah, I can imagine that. The impression that I've got from him is that he's a generally calm, kind of passive person, but that passiveness can also be a kind of way of just checking up people and waiting for what they might do, analyzing the situation.
You guys, you
were digging deep,
right? You guys left me in the dark because when I first walked in here, he was hiding behind the door.
Yeah.
No one told me. So I was like, I hope Greg isn't here, blah, blah, blah. And I thought I was teasing him. Little did I know he was teasing me because I'm like, wow, Greg is really not here. And then boom. Oh, hi, Mark.
I did not hit him. I did not.
And I said, was ist das? Yeah, it was. I love that guy so much. I mean, such a good dude. He doesn't have to do anything with us, but he does, and I love that.
And you guys got to know each other from the podcast, from the screenings of the room.
Yeah, that's how I met Nico. Mm-hmm. Yeah, because I thought, okay, this guy, okay, he knows his stuff.
He knew my face from the podcast.
Yeah, yeah, you're right.
Face made for podcasts.
He looks just like my radio. Mm-hmm. I actually, the first time I met him was because of the room. He had introduced Greg. I think he did a couple of, like, Q&As or whatever. And then from there, this is how like fast life moves. Mm-hmm. I go to this thing with the room. I meet Nico. And then I talk to Greg. Hey, man, this is so cool. You're doing this headlining thing. And a few months later, I'm doing the headlining thing. So I'm in Greg's spot, and I'm introducing the Elvis premiere.
You were in a bigger spot than Greg.
Yeah. Oh, wow. I wouldn't tell him that.
did you make a spot?
You were in the 800 people spot, and Greg was in the 160.
It was cool. My first actual gig here in Berlin was, mm-hmm, like doing, I think it's 3 songs before the Elvis premiere. Mm-hmm. So I did, Don't Be Cruel, Hound Dog, and I think 2001 Space Odyssey / That's All Right, Mom.
Oh, okay.
So it was really, really cool. They do the, you know, the whole thing, have me come out, sing 3 songs. People are going, was ist das? And then, I'd say, ladies and gentlemen, Miles Lerman's Elvis. And then they start the movie. I thought that was a really, really cool cinematic experience.
Yeah, that sounds totally fitting.
Yeah, it was very, very cool. And then I got to meet actually a couple of celebrities from the screenings because they went there to see the Elvis premiere. They see me. Oh, you're so great. Mm-hmm. Can I make a picture? Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Which is not how we say it in America. We say, can I get a pic with you? Mm-hmm. Here's, can I make a picture? Or make a photo? And I love that. So
almost overly polite, like.
Yeah. And then it's this weird, like, shift. Like, I go there, I see Greg. Next thing I know is I'm on stage. And then the third step is I'm on the screen. Life's weird, man.
Mm-hmm. I'm on the same stage as you, as we just noticed.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not gaining as much as you did, but never mind. For me, my art is idealistic. Yeah. You are like a shit whore who gets paid for every fucking move. My art is more.
Sure,
it's open for everyone.
Sure. The thing about me is I've been raised to be very humble. Mm-hmm. And so it's like I told you earlier, like, there are stories I probably could tell that could make a great book. Mm-hmm. But I'm not, I guess, between arrogance and self-confidence enough to know that they're important. So, like, the stories about James Dean's father, mm-hmm, there are people who would, like, pay so much money to hear the story. But to me, I'm like, it's just an older fella that, mm-hmm, I sang for. And that's something I wish I could develop is, like, at what point in time does the relevance kick in? Mm-hmm. So, do people care about what I'm saying? Do people care about these stories? If I ever figure that out, maybe I'll write a book. Greg actually told me about a year ago he would be happy to do the foreword for it. But how do you put your memories into words?
I mean, this is something that I gave a lot of thought about, and really just especially as a writer, because I started with more or less autofictional or autobiographical writing just recently. And I also had this kind of attitude that, like, my life isn't really relevant until I switched to the attitude that it doesn't matter whether my life was relevant in the sense of me being a public figure or something. This is not what I strive for. And rather, like, my experience with writing was that when a certain scene, a certain image doesn't leave your head, if you find yourself coming back to it, then it is important. And your task as a writer is to make others understand why it is important.
Well played. Okay. Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah, that was well done.
Mic drop.
Yeah. What?
Mic drop.
Mic drop. Yeah,
every
yeah.
Second quote.
How do you follow that? How do you follow
every
that?
Every second quote from Maria could end with mic drop.
That's kind of because of kind of a unlucky mixture between a poetry slammer and academic, because I've been both.
Yeah.
I am both. I'm doing my doctoral degree.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's the thing, because you think that there are things about you that aren't relevant. What did you tell me the other language you speak?
I am born Russian. I speak Russian fluently. I'm also pretty fluent, and as you can maybe recognize, in English and German. Yeah.
You speak English? Yeah. What? Was ist das?
Was ist das? Yeah.
But as soon as you said I speak Russian, there's a story right there.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, I haven't gotten really, dove deep into this. But everyone has a story. And that's the thing I think is interesting. Because, like, you say, I speak Russian. My first thought is, well, I want to hear why. Like, are you from Russia? It opens a whole Pandora's box of questions.
Yeah, and I think that this is a sensibility that people don't generally have, and that sometimes people are discouraged from, and something that people have to actively learn to look into the stories of their life, what kind of significance that these stories might have, and even if they don't have an audience right away, that like writing or being artistically active consists for me in having some experience and making it understandable to others.
Yeah, absolutely. And I know there are stories that I have, like, you had a great time with the Jason Momoa story.
Mm-hmm.
Really.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But to me, that's like, yeah, it happened.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea that someone would want to hear that, it doesn't click. I'm like, oh, maybe that's a story.
I think you have to stop thinking in terms of yourself, whether you are an interesting or relevant person, and more in terms of what is relevant about these stories. Because while I hear it talking, I know that it's not just the names. There is substance to these stories that is apart from whether that guy was Mike Tyson or not.
Well, he may not have been Mike Tyson, but his fist sure was.
Mm-hmm.
And that's, I mean, there are some things like Adam West, the original Batman.
Yeah.
I have a story about Adam West. So that story goes... I walked up to him. This is at a convention. I said, "Hey, Adam, Mr. West, could you tell me a story about Elvis?" "Well, sure. What do you want to hear?" I said, "Tell me, like, your favorite story about you with Elvis." "Well, I played football with Elvis." I said, "You did?" No, I didn't. But the fact that there was no story there, that was such an Adam West thing to say. And I'm like, this is
great humor.
My favorite. Yeah, that is my favorite thing. Elvira, Mistress of the Dark. I got to meet her.
Oh, great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, she was my childhood crush. Oh, I was in heaven. But she said to me, "No, I used to date Elvis." And
how little degrees of separation.
Yeah, yeah. And I thought it was going to be cool. I walked up to her. This is a convention. And so, of course, I'm Elvis. She's Elvira. And that's when she revealed to me that Elvira came from what she thought was a female version of Elvis.
Oh, that's sweet.
Yeah. And so she said, "Yeah, I actually dated Elvis." I said, "Really?" She said, "Yeah." And we dated for a while. It got very physical. I was like, "Oh, cool." And she goes, "And I can sing." And I thought, that's random.
Okay. That's new. That's news to me.
Yeah, and she's like, "Yeah." So whenever someone says, "Hey, you can really sing," I say, "Well, I had a little Elvis in me."
That's a hell of a lot of setup.
Right. I love that girl. Yeah, she's fantastic. Yeah. That, but I have stories like that. But like I said, to me, they're cool life stories. Mm-hmm. I should record them. I mean, I am right now on the podcast.
Mm-hmm.
But
First step.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. And these are stories I've only told like once or twice on my stand-up material or my shows. So you guys...
Are you doing stand-up?
I have done stand-up, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Cool.
I can tell you the one thing that I said during my stand-up routine that really, really caught people. I say, look, I came to Berlin for love.
Mm-hmm.
And they say, oh, why? I said, well, I met this...
Oh, why?
Yeah. Beautiful girl, and I came to Berlin. Why didn't you find a nice girl, you know, here home? You know, like here back in Indiana? And my response was, well, if you have 32 girls from my hometown in the same room, you have one full set of teeth. And no one can really say anything after that. That's a mic drop.
That's a hell of a lot of setup.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's Saarland style.
Oh, that's weird. Speaking of home, it's got a message that says, your house looks pretty cool on my Find My iPhone. Well, now I have to check this. So for the people who didn't know this, where I'm from is a very small town of 3,400 people,
mm-hmm.
and I've been performing
no light pollution.
Yeah, no light pollution. Yeah, and you can always tell where I live in this county because the barn in the roofing says Elvis.
Mm-hmm.
So like that's how Greg just randomly appeared at my house. He's driving around, boom, Elvis barn. Mm-hmm. Hey, guess where I am? I'm at your house. Oh, well, could you water my plants? Yeah, it was super cool.
To be stalked by a celebrity.
Yeah, it was cool. It was very cool. And the thing is, I do get homesick. So
mm-hmm.
it's always good when someone sends me a picture of my house and my pumpkin patch. Because that's the thing I miss the most. Like, no matter where I go in Berlin, I don't see too many pumpkin patches.
Mm.
I would love to.
I want you to come back as a... Johnny Cash and gaslight everyone and telling them there has never been any Elvis. What are you talking about? Just Johnny Cash song.
Yeah, this is just a misinterpretation. You're just not being accurate.
You're right, yeah. Okay, who's this bitch?
I don't know her.
I got a weird Instagram request. Yeah, I don't know who this
is. Oh, yeah, she looks grim. She looks evil. Like, at the photo. But that back, you know? This is a shameless self, like I paint.
Oh.
Yeah, you can commission... this is Romy Schneider.
Oh, okay.
And you can commission stuff by me.
Oh.
If you want...
Shameless plug. I appreciate that.
Yeah. I'm making no pretenses, but if you want some kind of painting, then you can just ask me.
And what is your Instagram account or Instagram handle?
Okay, yeah, sure. Other people can also ask me Nebelskulptur.
I love how I pulled you into that.
Mm, yeah. Oh, you're just such a professional.
I'm a guest on your broadcast. Oh, your podcast. I'm like, oh, by the way, say Nico, what was your Instagram?
No, you should tell our listeners your Instagram right now.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, you should.
All of my handles are that Elvis guy. And
that Elvis guy.
Yeah, the reason is I put it all one word.
This Elvis guy was occupied already.
It wasn't, oddly.
Oh?
Yeah, oddly, yeah. I mean, Instagram.
So you have a second account, this Elvis guy and that.
No, I should.
Oh,
yeah.
I think you should reincarnate or do a comeback as Elvis Costello.
Elvis Costello, there you go. I do love peace, love, and understanding. What's so funny about peace, love, and understanding? Instagram is literally instagram.com/thatelvisguy. TikTok @thatelvisguy. YouTube @thatelvisguy. And the reasoning was because when I used to work for Pepsi Cola back home.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And I would always be in the
modeling?
Pepsi.
Modeling or?
No. I mean, I did do some modeling, but no, this mm-hmm. is a different thing. And then I would go out after hours in uniform. And they'd say, oh, yeah, there's a Pepsi guy here doing this. Well, who was it? That Elvis guy? I'm like, ooh, I'm going to own that. So, mm-hmm, yeah, mm-hmm. I owned it. That Elvis guy. So,
great.
Yeah. It's good marketing to have one handle for all.
Mm-hmm.
That's beautiful. Yeah, I love that. Yeah. It's helpful.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I got a bit of a different story, but also with, like, the just... stages and names experience, because I'm from Russia, so I got a name that's very long and difficult. And one time at a slam poetry evening, all of the other ones were announced with last and first name, and me only with my first name, because they couldn't pronounce it. So I thought I had to retake my father's middle name, so they could have something in my passport that is not as hard as to pronounce as my actual last name.
Well, you know, that's a bait. What is your last name?
Odoyevskaya. It isn't even funny. It's just long.
That.
Odoyevskaya.
I never ever told me how to pronounce it. I was always pronouncing it wrong.
No, that's pretty typical for Germans, and I don't really care either way.
Okay. Oh, money. I'll just call you Oh Money.
I want my second name to be pronounced wrong when I'm like in your country.
Pussy. No, yeah. Pussy.
Pussy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you'd be very, very popular, actually. What's up, baby? It's a pussy man.
Oh, no, about names. The maiden name of my mother, which she didn't keep, was Arshanskaya. And Arshanskaya, there's literally Arsh in there. There's literally butt in there.
Oh.
Bless you.
Mm-hmm.
Well, no. There's that. See, mine's Native American heritage. So, like my last name is Howard.
Mm-hmm.
How means, like, hi, mm-hmm. and like, Native American language. So, it's basically like, Brandon, hi, how are you? So it's kind of perfect for me.
I am high.
Yeah.
In fact, always.
It's perfect for me because I'm like the most like approachable dude ever. So mm-hmm. I love talking to people. And
great.
Yeah. So when you're like, oh, Brandon, how are you? I'm like, hi, how are you? Great to talk to you. How's your dog? You know, I like I said, I love people.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's why I'm in Berlin. That's why I stay in Berlin. I love people. I love hearing the stories.
Yeah, and probably also for your like current profession as an artist, because maybe because being an artist and performing live, sure. you get to hear a lot of live stories.
I really do. Yeah, that's what's tricky though, because my stories typically I do tell stories,
mm-hmm.
and it's tricky because like if they don't speak English, they can't hear my story.
Mm.
But then again,
it's set to music, right?
Yeah, and, music universal. Absolutely. Yeah. It's a what are we watching, Nico? What is going on here? What is it? Was ist das?
Absolutely no idea, but it looks good.
It's pretty cool, yeah. I just look up.
Cowboys and hanging people.
Yeah. This is very America.
Mm-hmm.
All you need is guns and freedom.
And lynch mobs.
What is it? It is... Gottes General, Schlacht die Freiheit.
The General of God. God's General.
The General of God. Okay. Oh, God's in
Sounds
General.
Epic. Maybe. Have you seen Furiosa?
I haven't. I love Mad Max, though. I should watch that. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I should watch that. It's weird that they changed it, because Charlize Theron killed that role. It's like, she was awesome.
Mm-hmm. So it's, yeah, it's but then again, it's a prequel.
So
of course it makes more sense to cast actually like
someone younger.
Younger, okay, people who look like children. But yeah, but Anya Taylor-Joy, The Witch, have you seen it?
She's adorable.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's adorable. I like her a lot.
And she, in her own way, she also kills the fuck out of that role. And what I liked a lot about Furiosa is that it didn't try to be the next Fury Road. It's totally a very different film, and I really appreciate that they tried to do their own thing with it without resorting to expectations.
You know, that's one thing. I won't get too much on the soapbox here, but prequels are such a slippery slope.
Yeah.
Because you have a film that people love. Like, you have to be really, really confident in the script to mm-hmm. go back and think, all right, well, before this happened, maybe this happened. So I find it very gutsy. I'm going to watch that just because you said that, actually. Because mm-hmm. I'm curious now. But it takes a lot of great writing and directing to make a great prequel.
Yeah, and I think that Furiosa managed that very confidently, because at various points at that journey of the young Furiosa, it's actually a major theme of the film, whether it's still worth it to go on, where there's hope. So also, it even retroactively, although I really love that film, makes Fury Road better because it seems more hard-earned. And I think the film really says some things and shows some things for which there was no room in Fury Road.
That's a fantastic summary, actually. Well done.
I didn't spoil anything.
No, you did. I did get a spoiler. I won't say it on air here, but I did get a spoiler today, which I thought was kind of cool.
Mm-hmm.
I heard there may or may not be a cameo, and I thought that was kind of cool. So, yeah, I thought that was pretty cool. That's kind of the reason I want to watch it, because mm-hmm. a situation like that, like, I wonder if they're going to like do a little like nod to the things that have
it's
already
done.
It's
also a movie to watch on the big screen.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't want to watch
it
on TV. Yeah.
It's absolutely beautiful. I thought that the Fury Road Mad Max, it lead more into the beauty of it all, or into the aestheticness of it all, as well as the War Boys as the wives. Mm. And the recent Mad Max Furiosa is way more grisly, I would say.
Still more playful, more colorful also.
Of Mad Max? Really?
Yeah, of course. I mean, have you seen the second?
With
my Mel Gibson, yeah.
Oh, yeah, of course, yeah.
Yeah, sure. I don't even think that playfulness or even some kind of camp value is that foreign to Mad Max because it got it from the second movie on.
Yeah. I just love the fact we can do this. Because, mm-hmm. like, when I was growing up, that was unheard of. Like, this is the movie we have to add on.
Mm-hmm.
But when I was younger, prequels weren't really a thing. So I love the fact that we're in a culture now where they can come up with really great stories behind the stories that you already love.
Mm-hmm. But also, wasn't The Godfather 2 half a prequel or half of the backstory of Don Corleone?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's a fair you know, it's assumption. It's makes a lot of sense, actually. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that's Francis Ford Coppola.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, you can't really question a genius.
I mean, the last one that he's made and that he introduced at Cannes was pretty much panned by the critics because it's apparently so chaotic. But then again, this just makes me want to see the film more. It's like 122 million production costs, all of his own pocket.
No.
All out of pocket. And like, whatever may happen, I just really appreciate the artistic dedication.
Yeah, I love that. I absolutely love that. Because there's a lot of sacrifice that we don't see.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we see the on-screen, but, I mean, we're friends with Greg. We've seen some of the things that he's had to deal with. Writing your own script and then all these other things. He has to pull in, like, all these different production people. It has to be so draining.
Mm-hmm.
And then, that's why I always kind of like, I try to give a good nod to people who are behind the scenes because I can't imagine all the stuff that happens behind the scenes. I've been an actor on set.
Mm-hmm.
I've been like an actor on the movie sets and I see the people, like even the guy holding the boom. I couldn't do that.
Yeah.
Like he's just standing there for like 20 minutes, half hour, hour, just holding this thing. And you know it's uncomfortable, but that's his job. So the lighting technicians, the lighting has to be just right.
Mm-hmm.
Sound has to be just right. I have so much respect for people like behind the scenes.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, and I can't even imagine from what I've seen of Fury Road and of the news.
Yeah, Furiosa.
Yeah, I can't imagine being on set for that.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's so chaotic.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know whether there's already a documentary about this, but it's been widely known that the actual work on Fury Road was hell for all of the actors.
Oh, really?
Yeah. It was a very dense and physically demanding time.
I could see that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it definitely looks hot. So I mean, it looks hot, it looks muggy, it looks, like, mm-hmm. dirty. I've been fortunate that everything I've been in so far has been...
Indoors?
Yeah, all but one. All but one. There's one called Wo is Wanda, or Where is Wanda?
Mm-hmm.
And we had to film as if it was summer, but in February.
Mm.
We had people that were in summer dresses, people that were in skirts, people that were in like, you know, booty shorts. And it was the freezing cold, like the coldest week of the entire Berlin winter.
Oh no.
There we were, and we were in shorts. And then one of my scenes, I had to walk across like this lawn, which is probably like half a kilometer. So I'm walking half of a kilometer in shorts and like this like Hawaiian shirt, freezing my sequins off. But when you watch the TV show, I don't think you'll notice because they're that good. Mm-hmm. Like they can make summer look like winter, winter look like summer. Mm-hmm. And like I said,
and some people shivering from the cold.
Yeah, yeah. That's the one thing because Heike, I'm going to say this wrong. Heike Makatash.
Heike Makatash.
Yeah, she's in this. Mm-hmm. So
Heike Makatash. Yeah.
Yeah, she is phenomenal.
Yeah.
I loved watching her.
She's a household name.
Oh, she's fantastic. She's amazing. Her and Axel Stein. Mm-hmm. I got to watch them do their thing, and Heike is so.
I got to meet her. She was like one of the early hosts from German music television Viva, the first broadcasting.
Huh. Yeah. Yeah. So the equivalent MTV.
Exactly.
Oh yeah, we talked about that. Yeah.
And, then at some red carpet event, she was a little late, and I had to let her pass, and I was like, you know, the heroine of my childhood.
Of course, yeah.
And she was like,
oh, yeah, she was such a it was amazing to watch her because, I mean, when you're an actor, you have to like turn on like that. So if you have to have tears like that. And so she had this fan. I'm trying to not ruin it because I, you know, non-disclosure, blah blah blah. But to watch her just, they say bitte, and so they say bitte, you're in yeah. character, and Heike just turned it on. So she was having a rage moment. It's like bitte. Bah, bah, bah. It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. It was so fascinating because her whole everything just turned, and that's how you know that an actor or actress is great, mm-hmm. because they're no longer the person that you thought they were 2 seconds ago. Mm-hmm. It's fascinating.
Yeah, they can make you believe that, or live in that fantasy for some time. But I've been wondering: have you done any theater work? Did you ever visit a acting school?
I did back in my younger days. Keep in mind, I'm 45. I did By My Birdie.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
As if there was a more perfect part for me than Conrad Birdie. Mm-hmm. So, for those unfamiliar, Conrad Birdie is basically an Elvis type of character. And he sings Elvis songs, you know, Elvis theme songs. And the whole premise...
Water?
Oh, please. The whole premise is fans watch this Conrad Birdie / Elvis go off to the military, and then how they deal with it. So it was like literally the perfect theater gig for mm-hmm. me. I enjoyed that. It was so much fun. I do have a moment from the stage where I was supposed to take a punch.
Mm-hmm. And he actually it got awfully real.
Yeah. He went,
real
he
method
went,
acting.
Yeah, he went full on like Berlin Ollie. He's like, you know what? I'm just going to punch you. So, and I went down because, I mean, that's my role. But yeah, it really hurt. Like between that and Mike Tyson, mm-hmm. people like really like to punch me. I don't know.
Okay, Brandon, Leute.
Yes, sir.
We're going to end up this episode because there are probably more random anarchistic things to record within the next couple of days.
You have no idea, my friend.
Holy shit.
45 years worth of stories?
Oh, get me and Greg together. Mm-hmm. This is going to be a great podcast.
Oh, great.
Me
great.
And Greg together. Oh, man. We are like a... Like, I'll say something. Well, you witnessed earlier. I'll say something. Mm-hmm. He'll be like, boom, 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 mm-hmm. boom. So,
oh, great. Like a tennis match.
Yeah, we feed off each other, and it's just fantastic. So, but yeah, his dry sense of humor really adds to it, too. Mm-hmm. So... sometimes I say some things I'm like, I probably shouldn't have said, and then he'll make it funny. Like that.
Okay, Brandon, are you ready for the revenge?
For the revenge?
Yeah.
Okay.
What is a revenge?
You were begging for the revenge.
Uh-oh.
The Mario Kart revenge.
Oh! Yeah, I'm gonna die. Yeah.
So we have reasons to end the show tonight.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
No, thank you. Thank you for having me.
Thank you, Nebel.
Sculptur.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yes, it's a sculpture of mist and fog.
I heard fart.
Yeah.
That's all I heard was fart.
And now no. It's your part.
It's a sculpture made of farts.
A sculpture made of farts.
Yeah. It's a material.
Wir können die Abmoderation so wie die Anmoderation machen.
Mm-hmm.
Dann noch ein
Schönen guten Morgen.
Schönen guten Morgen.
Schönen guten Mittag.
Schönen guten Mittag.
Schönen guten Abend.
Schönen guten Nacht.
Yes.
Hey!
Schönen also, guten Naked.
Liked und abonniert und followed. Das Elvis guy.
That Elvis guy. That Elvis guy.